Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Will Parkinson, NFL on YouTube, joined by a huge friend of the show, as a weekly guest throughout the season. Now gets, you know, now we're in his domain. His Bears are building a title team, and the Jets are making, you know, shrewd void year salary cap moves. So Brad Spielberger, Brad, how we doing? I know we talk all the time, but you know, welcome back to the pod.
Yeah, it's been a minute, and like you said, this is actually what I'm useful for. So yeah, glad to be back. Jets have been interesting, making some moves. Doesn't sound like they're done either. I haven't gotten a Taylor ham and egg sandwich from any Jets fans just yet, but I'm hopefully after the pod we'll get there.
Yeah, NYJ Matt, figure it out, buddy. no, look, obviously, you know, pretty crazy, like I would say week in for the Jets in terms of started very slow. You know, the first hour of free agency, nothing happened to the Jets. The Jets lose Bryce Huff on a, as predicted by both people on this pod, 3-year, $51 million deal, which got released today in terms of the actual, you know, specificity of the contract. But slowly kind of as the week went on, they slowly started to do a little bit more. And the Morgan Moses, Tyron Smith moves, I think, were moves that, you know, maybe Tyron is something that was somewhat expected in terms of a potential target. I just don't think either of us thought, like, yeah, they're probably going to get this done. It kind of felt like he was a Chief until proven otherwise. And we were both, I mean, at least I feel like I was proven otherwise. I thought he would be a Jet eventually by Thursday, but it took me a while to get there. They've now kind of completed their starting offensive line on paper. And now we're getting a Marvin Harrison rumor from Daniel Jeremiah. There's a lot going on. So I guess, what do you make of the move so far? And we can talk a little bit more specifically about Tyron and just the deal he ended up taking, which the Jets quote unquote didn't think he would take, which...
Yeah, I think
we'll say it for a minute.
yeah. No, I think last year they kind of hoped for the best at offensive line. You bring in Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, Dwayne Brown has been a good player in this league for a very, very long time, but you were hoping for great outcomes across the board. You were also hoping that right tackle, you get a, you know, growth from some young recent draft picks, day three draft picks, and just kind of hoping things would work out. That obviously did not go according to plan. And they said, okay, we're just going to do whatever it takes to just make sure we have bookend tackles. Yeah, they're older. I get that. Morgan Moses has never really missed time in the NFL. Obviously, a former Jet. I did kind of quip on Twitter. They probably should have just extended him or signed him to a new contract instead of doing it. But look, cheap trade, great player, knows the building, knows the facility. I always think it's cool. Like when a guy goes back to a place, it shows just that like the relationship was solid. They couldn't work things out contractually, but there was no ill will or bad blood or anything like that. So I love the Moses move. You know, that is a very, very solid right tackle, has been for a long time. And look, Tyron Smith is, I don't know, he's a Hall of Famer, but he's a borderline in that conversation in terms of talent when he was healthy. And last year he was, played 875 snaps, is one of the best pass protecting left tackles in the entire NFL over the last decade plus. You're just betting, you know, there is, I guess, a little bit of a bet there too that he stays healthy, but I think you're also still going to insulate and make sure you can overcome that more if you have to. I love it. It's just, look, we're not going to take the risk of some things at key positions on offense not working out, so we're going to take some swings.
Yeah, look, I think it was a move that made a ton of sense. I think it just opened up the flexibility for the Jets now with the rest of the offseason. They have Mike Williams in for a visit today. I believe Jadeveon Clowney is tomorrow now. You know, they still have a hole at safety. They still have a hole at edge, hole at receiver, running back too. All those things are solvable, and obviously they could use probably two total more linemen, whether that be one interior guy, one you know, swing tackle, whether that's a Bakhtiari. It, as crazy as it sounds, like the Jets very much, I talked to this on Saturday, there's a real world in which Bakhtiari comes to the Jets because he wants to hang out with Rodgers and thinks, listen, maybe I could go compete for another, you know, for a Super Bowl ring. And, you know, if I'm healthy, I'll play and they'll figure it out. If I'm not healthy, they're not screwed. And you could convince me 17 games of Bakhtiari and Tyron Smith, probably a first team all pro left tackle. And the Jets offensive line is awesome. Or, you know, you could draft an offensive lineman at 10, which I know Connor Rogers talked a little bit about yesterday, of just, you know, Troy Fontenot or Fontenot, however you want to pronounce his name. You know, maybe he can play all five spots. Is he a guy that you hope beats out John Simpson in year one and then replaces Morgan Moses year two? Like, there's a lot of different moves to be made. I want to talk at the end about the contracts and how the Jets are building this roster and what they're doing and explaining void years a little bit, because apparently I'm an idiot also, even though I knew what was going on. The possibility I talked a little bit about Saturday is it doesn't have to be trading up to 5, and it might be sitting put at 10. It might be trading back and taking a receiver or a pass catcher in general. Don't want to eliminate Brock Bowers. Daniel Jeremiah, who is as plugged in as anybody into the draft community, as plugged into the Jets draft strategy as anybody, had the Jets trading up to 5 to get Marvin Harrison today in his mock draft. Into mock draft, I understand it doesn't mean shit. Let's be very clear. But when it comes to Jeremiah, obviously, you give Connor's love, and you know, Trev, obviously friends of the pod, and definitely Schrager's mock that week of the draft. These things do have a lot of indication of what teams are thinking, what they could make a move on. The Chargers are going to need depth. Their roster is very, very much a not deep roster, and Harbaugh obviously values that. Those stronger rosters, not necessarily built around a star. Could you see a move in which the Jets really go up and go to 5 or 6, or they go maybe to 8 with the Falcons to jump the Bears? I don't know what's going to happen there, even maybe trading with the Bears because the Bears have no picks left. I guess all that to say, like, is this a real possibility? Because I think it is, and I think all of a sudden you look at the Jets, if they ran out Marv, Garrett, Breece, all under the age of 24, you're like, oh, this is something pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears actually did it last year to start there. They moved from 9 to 10. They didn't want to take Jalen Carter, and they got an extra fourth, and that fourth actually didn't become Keenan Allen, but whatever. Their other fourth became Keenan Allen. So, like, it all kind of, you know, Ryan Poles wants to move around. I do think they are potentially a team. And, yeah, if you have, let's say, like, Denver, Las Vegas, New Orleans sitting there at 12 to 14, they miss on quarterback, but they want to go up and get maybe the third receiver, maybe not Marr, but still, like, Odunze or Neighbors or something like that, who I'm sure are also on the Jets' radar. Maybe you do that, or Atlanta, I think, is a good shout as well. They don't need quarterback anymore. Maybe they move down. They're still probably going to take Dallas Turner or something like that, and maybe he's still there for them at 10. So, yeah, I mean, I think they'll explore it. I think you are, as we're talking about, they're going all in for a 2-year, maybe 3-year window with Aaron Rodgers. The 10th overall pick to me as well, and this is backed on research and data I've done. I wrote an article about it. When teams get draft picks they did not expect to get, this one's a little bit different because it's like a condition that didn't vest, but when teams acquire picks from trades and stuff, the likelihood they then move those picks, whether it's trading up in the draft or trading for veterans, is exponentially higher. Like, they truly treat it as house money, and it's just not their original draft slot. They just care less about it, it seems. So you could kind of maybe argue the Jets could say, look, we didn't think we'd even have – we were hoping we'd have the 63rd pick for or whatever, you know, from Green Bay. You know, I'm getting lost in my thoughts here, but you know what I mean, right? So I think you could argue that. I think if they're sitting there and a receiver is still sitting there, like you said, Chargers at 6, maybe even Tennessee, who's kind of – they splurge at receiver. They obviously need tackle, but whatever. I'm sure they'll at least have the conversations.
Yeah, look, the Titans are an interesting team just because Bill Callahan's the offensive line coach. They're in a very different position because if anybody's going to develop any of these guys, if I was the Titans, I'm going as high a ceiling as possible. I'm not even look as great as I think Joe Alt is. Like, they're the one team that can go, we'll take Demaryius Mims right here. And like, if it works, he'll be the best tackle in this class. And we have the one guy in the NFL has proven pretty much I can develop anybody, whether that's in Cleveland, Dallas, with the Jets, whoever it may be. I'm just throwing out the example. Maybe I'm just trying to manifest it for my own well-being. But I genuinely feel like if you're the Jets, the argument to stay at 10, unless one of the top three receivers is there, I think the best argument is probably to just take an offensive lineman and say, we'll protect ourselves. They can redshirt. We'll protect ourselves against Tyron or any AVT or any of these guys getting hurt. And on top of that, you know, if Moses has played declines or Tyron Smith all of a sudden looks washed, like next year we have a left tackle. I think if they trade back or trade up, I'm in a much better, like, take a receiver and just – and we look at the market, and Jerry Jeudy got paid a few moments ago. At the time, it's like, oh, 5th and a 6th, I think it was, you know, for him. Wow, shrewd move. it's not such a shrewd move when you go and give the guy $60 million or whatever it was, and almost two thirds or whatever of it is guaranteed. He's like a top seven or eight AAV player, you know, in terms of money, I'm pretty sure at the moment. Jerry Jeudy's not that good. He's like a solid number two in the NFL, at least in my opinion, from what I've seen. Not if you don't, if you leave that draft status, solid player. So, you know, we talked about Brandon Ayuk a little bit last night. I just feel like the Jets need two more pass catchers at receiver. You cannot have Alan Lazard, really. They're obviously, quote unquote, trying to trade him, but they didn't try to trade him. AKA, no one wants him because he makes a ton of money and is very bad. I guess I'm asking in terms of, like, what would your best strategy be towards filling this? Like, Mike Williams, which we'll talk about in a second, in the building. Outside of Mike Williams, what's the best strategy forward here to get a number two to Garrett Wilson, for Aaron Rodgers, who loves to spread the ball around? He peppers one guy with targets, but he definitely utilizes four, five, six options a game, let alone during the season.
Yeah, I think you have the two store brand versions of Mike Williams, with all due respect to these guys, but like, they're obviously going to talk to MVS. We know that. I think DJ Chark is the same profile, 6'4", 4'3", 440, can win downfield. You know, I think it wasn't great last year individually, had some drops, but he also was playing in the Carolina Panthers offense. So I would sign one of those three guys. And I still do think if I'm the Jets, I just sit there at 10 and just take my favorite tackle or receiver that's still there. Or like you said, a small trade down if you like a bunch and you're saying, okay, there's like Brian Thomas, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. at LSU, or insert player here. You love Fatanu, you love Fuaga. You think one of those guys is going to drop a little bit and you just make that move. Both guys, as you're saying, that can play guard and can be backups for multiple positions on this team. I think that's probably what I would do.
I'm not saying obviously DJ knows exactly what he's talking about, but in that trade up, he had them going, you know, just it was 10-5, and based on the point scale, it was essentially a second rounder next year. I would do that in a heartbeat. That to me is like the biggest no-brainer of all time. You know, Marvin Harrison or Neighbors on a 5-year rookie wage scale is pretty ridiculous. I'd trade next year's one personally, because I feel like if you have that, next year's one becomes a, like you're gonna, you hope you're really good. And honestly, if you suck next year, like a lot's gonna a lot's gonna change. So what would you think it would cost to move up, in your opinion? Is it just as simple as like a future? Because the problem is the Jets don't have a second round pick this year. So like they can't really, unless you're including a DJ Reed in a trade, like I don't know that they have enough to move up to 5, but I guess if it's really only going to cost a 2025-2, maybe it's a 2025-2 in this year, it's a 3 and you get back a 4. I don't know what it might be, but like that to me seems like a no brainer. I understand the hesitancy from some folks, but I'm not really as well versed on the 2025 second round receiver targets for next year's class yet. So I just take, I'd trade up and if I could, if that's really the price.
Yeah. So if you just go by Jimmy Johnson, which is the, you know, the draft trade chart that does still control the NFL marketplace, it's going from 1300 points, which the Jets is number 10, and the number 5 is 1700. So you have to, it's not clean, even, you know, add 400 points. It's got to be a little bit more than that. There's a premium to go up, but next year's first would do that. I don't know if I would do that. I totally see what you're saying. Like, there is an element of just whatever. Just make something happen. Go get a special prospect. And like you said, if it doesn't work, everyone in the building is getting fired anyway. So I get that for sure. If you could not do that and maybe give us a second and more in 2025 or what have you, I think that could be interesting and could be a route to go. But yeah, it's going to be pricey.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about some of the contract structures here at the Jets, and I think that's the biggest talking point. They redid CJ Mosley's deal, with something we talked about a lot. I talked about it with Jason right before free agency, and I mean, you talked about it at the start of the offseason. They had to figure out something there. They should have done it last year, to be honest, but whatever. They ended up having a bunch of cap space they rolled over when they restructured Rodgers and didn't do anything at the trade deadline. You should have just done it last year. You could have paid Huff and whatever.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I guess, what'd you make of that? And then right now they're sitting about $9 million in cap space. There's a lot they could still do. Obviously, they haven't really restructured anybody. I don't think any of those guys would be mad if they got restructured, having spoken with a lot of people. They're not going to mind the cash right away. What do you make of the void year situation? They've pushed a lot of money. 2025, it's not even the problem. It's 2026 is like they're going to be paying for like half the roster that's not on the roster. And that's fine. I understand the cap will continue to go up and we won't even we'll forget about it. That said, what do you think of the strategy? Can you kind of walk through of like what this all means? Just, it's basically just, you know, backloading a credit card at this point.
Yeah. So first off, yeah, the 2026 cap's probably going to be $300 million, if not more. So it's like, you know, that is certainly a calculation. What it is, like you just said, it's a credit card. You're pushing into the future. In my opinion, like some teams that do this in perpetuity, I don't like when they do it. When you have, when you, the Saints with Drew Brees, cool. The Buccaneers with Tom Brady, who, by the way, the Buccaneers did not prorate money at all. Like they didn't give signing bonuses at all. And then they were one of the most aggressive proration teams in the entire NFL for that window for Tom Brady. It's the same principle. I do not care. Push every single cap hit on your entire roster as far out as you want. And look, even some teams that I do like what they do, like Philly, they also do that because the entire principle is simple. The cap dollars are going to hit your cap at some point, but $1 on a $255 million cap is worth more than $1 on a $300 million cap. So yes, it's a credit card, but there's like reverse interest, right? Like reverse inflation, well, normal inflation. So you're essentially just using the inflation of the salary cap to your advantage because, like I just laid out, it's worth more. So yeah, I don't want to do it all the time, but in this window with Aaron Rodgers, you should be doing it. If you aren't, frankly, you're just not really maximizing what you can do. The second piece, you know, tied to CJ Mosley, obviously they tacked on the void years here. They basically just split his 2024 over 2 years from a cash standpoint and then guaranteed him money in both of those years, where it kind of creates them to force the decision next season. If they let him go, he'll have a pretty strong number. I'm sure that money is offset, but he'll have a strong number to kind of work against, you know, and if they try to cut him, okay, I'll walk away with 4.5, I think it is, in fully guaranteed dollars as of right now. So, like the move, like you said, maybe you could argue you do it earlier, but he played some good ball. I mean, Quincy Williams now is on one of the best value contracts in the entire NFL at the same position. So, yeah, and that's what they're going to do with Tyron as well. The same principle, the same thing. I know his cap hit is $12.5 million. That's because, though, and obviously we want every single incentive to hit. We'd love them to pay $20 million for Tyron Smith. But
That's the goal. Pay him all the money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the goal. But if they don't, they get a cap credit. So that's how that works. Like, it's on the cap right now because it is likely to be earned because it's the snaps were what he played last year. But let's say, and we don't want this scenario to happen, he plays 10% of snaps. They would get all that. You know, the cash is never getting paid, but the cap would also come back to them in a cap credit after the year. So, but anyway, yeah, they should continue to do this. They're probably going to continue to do this. If they sign Mike Will, let's say it's a one-year, $8 million deal, he'll have a $2 million cap hit in the first year, and they'll just push the rest down the line.
I want to ask you two more things here before we finish. Obviously, there's a lot of talking points today as Bryce Huff's kind of contract quite close to formally came out. You know, Jason obviously had it up on the site, and his cap hit this year is the same as cap hit it was last year. There's obviously pretty very reasonable cap hits the first 3 years, and then the last year, which is obviously not part of the deal. Shout out to the dude trolling me on Twitter saying I have CTE, is a $27 million cap hit. Can you just explain what that means and like why his did they just push everything into that year four? Because it says like you could cut him, but he's obviously not on the roster, so I don't know how you would cut him and save all the money. That part was definitely a little bit confusing.
Yeah, so this is what the Eagles are doing, and they did it with Jalen Hurts. They've done it with a bunch of contracts now. So they are maxing out proration. So instead of restructuring deals, what they're actually doing now is just putting option bonuses in each year of the deal, which prorates the money preemptively, even though it hasn't been paid yet. And I won't get too far in the weeds, but the mechanism there that they're kind of manipulating is – if you trade a player before the option bonus gets paid, you actually, again, you get a cap credit back. It was, if folks remember, there was kind of that conversation with Aaron Rodgers. He had the same setup. He obviously changed it and made it a roster bonus that was in the following year. But anyway, so that's what they're doing. So as of right now, if he does play the 3 years, they would have that massive $27.5 million dead cap number in 2027 when he's not on the roster. They could also, though, what they also do is the void date for them is after the beginning of the new league year sometimes. We'll see with Huff because he's not – like they did it with Jason Kelce and Alshon Jeffrey and Malik Jackson, guys that were going to retire. It'd be different here, but they also – you can still post June 1. So the total value would still be $27.5 million, but you could spread it over 2 years. But again, that's a little bit difficult for a guy that's probably trying to sign a third contract. You know, he'll be 29 in 2027. So ideally, he's signing a big old third contract. But anyway – that's what Philly does. That's their entire principle. And like I said, you know, I think you could quibble. Should you always be doing that? They took one hit in 2020 when they made the playoffs that year and the Bucks kind of steamrolled them, or 2021, whatever it was. But they obviously were way better than everybody expected. Everyone was saying they were going to be the worst team in the NFL. And obviously Howie and the boys still made the playoffs. But yeah, they just it's not that they don't care or that they don't like, they don't care about dead cap hits. It's just to them, it's going to hit our books at some point. The one thing I will say, and obviously fans hate hearing this, you do need an owner that wants to spend a ton of cash in every single season. So yes, like the Jets could have copied this from a cap standpoint. That was not the you know, the construct that made this made Bryce Huff an Eagle as opposed to a Jet. The Jets don't want to pay the money. You know, they could do the same thing cap wise, but you know, Woody and the boys did not want to spend the money he got.
Last question here, Jadeveon Clowney and Mike Williams in there. You've referenced what you around what Mike will get. I know of talking to people, they feel really strongly about getting him. The Panthers are the wild card in both these situations, in my opinion, at least from what I've heard slash just using your brain. Tepper has no problem spending cash. We know that. Dude loves to burn cash, literally. You know, bulldoze his neighbor's house, the whole nine yards. Odds you think they get both these done, and B, like, what do contracts look like for both? Clowney has been a mercenary for a long time and was probably his best year of his career last year. The Jets do need another edge rusher. And then if you look at, again, Mike Williams coming off the injury, but 2 years ago was getting – got 3 for $60. Like, you know, so – I guess, what does that kind of look like? And then we'll kind of wrap with that.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Mike Will is going to be a one-year flyer for, I would guess, 7 to 10 range, with obviously incentives cooked in. And even that might be strong. You know, I'm not a doctor, so that element I can't speak to. And like you said, his next visit is in Carolina. And this isn't like a slight on them. They've overpaid on almost every contract they've given out. That's what happens when you're the Carolina Panthers and their current set.
Kevin Zeitler, $6 million. Robert Hahn, $100 million.
You know, right. And obviously Jets fan, you know, it happens. It's not like I'm not taking a shot. Like, it's just, you got to convince players to come play for your team when they know they're not going to make the playoffs and whatever. So that is a risk. He also played at Clemson, right? So there's, like, you know, the local component too. But anyway, I think 1 year, $7-8 million flyer, add some incentive, not Tyron Smith level incentives, but, you know, $3-5 million you could also earn with a bunch of stats. It helps that his stats were nothing last year, so you can make a lot of it. We talked about it, not likely to be earned and not hit your salary cap. And then if he earns it, he gets in the adjustment. So that's what I think. Clowney, same thing. I think Williams way more likely than Clowney.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the Clowney thing. But yeah, no, obviously, you know, look, the Jets are an exciting, you know, situation. I appreciate everybody for listening, obviously. And we'll talk to you later this week. Appreciate Brad. Brad, as always, for hopping on. And hopefully if there's some good news with Mike Williams or Jadeveon Clowney or any of these guys, I will hop back on here. But until then, we'll talk to you guys later this week.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.